Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. So, I once was asked to write a paragraph about the question, what is the underlying belief that has been central to your suffering? And so I reflected on that question and I came up with the following paragraph. And at some point, you might wanna reflect on this too. What is your underlying belief for your suffering, central to your suffering? The underlying belief that has been central to my suffering can be easily summed up in the short phrase, things should be different than they are. Every time this belief pops up, suffering will follow as the cart wheel follows the ox's foot. This belief implies that there is something to get in this world, since else things wouldn't have to be different. When the belief is operating, there is the sense that there is an I that needs things to be a certain way. While in reality, there is no one that needs anything, no one to get something. And in fact, and to face the fact, nothing is different than it is. Was my answer to the question. Might be different for you. But what I wanted to talk about today is this notion that things should be different than they are. That might be something that you can relate to. I think that this belief is kind of a thing that underlies a lot of our suffering. Every time that unwholesome mind states come up, for example, like fear or anger or anxiety, there's usually something that we want different than it is. And I'd actually like to call it more of a pattern than a belief, like a pattern that can come up that things should be different than they are, just so ingrained in our being, such so pervasive in our hearts and minds. Every time that we think or believe that this pattern comes up, there is some e unease, some discomfort, some unsatisfactoriness, some suffering. I'll give some examples. Like when our meditation, there's a lot of thoughts coming up in our meditation, and we can't really seem to focus on our meditation object at all. And then we might get frustrated and might think, oh, why is this happening to me? I'm such a lousy meditator. I can't do anything right. And like, I don't want it to be this way. It should not be happening. Or when we experience pain during the meditation, then we might feel aversive towards it and we don't really want it there. We want the pain to go away so that we can finally have a peaceful meditation. When we feel restless during the meditation, we might think like, oh, we're supposed to be at peace during meditation, right? Now I'm all restless. I don't want to be restless. And in daily life, there's plenty of examples. Like the other day, I went out to run some errands and it was so busy everywhere. Like everyone was doing Christmas shopping, I think. And I felt some frustration. Like, why does everyone decide to go out at the same time? And I wanted it to be different than it was. I wanted just to run my errand and not run into traffic and stuff. Or sometimes the computer is not doing what I want, and then, experience frustration and just, want the computer to be different than it is. It's just following this program, you know, it's just programmed to be this way, and I fighting what's there. And then in contrast, these moments that things are okay the way they are, you know, and we don't feel these kind of mind states, and we don't feel the frustration or the anger or whatever it is, then, you know, if there's just this okayness with what's happening, then there's actually a sort of ease and peace and relaxation present. So we can really see the difference in those two different kind of attitudes or patterns of wanting things to be different and just being okay with what is. So this pattern of that it should be different, and it can be connected to both greed and aversion. So it can also be connected to wanting things differently, right? It doesn't have to be aversion. And these are the two out of the three unwholesome roots of existence. So basically all of our unwholesome mind states come out of these three roots of greed, aversion, and delusion. That's the third one. And this pattern is also very connected to delusion or ignorance, sometimes called ignorance. And like when we are wanting this peaceful meditation, then we have this greed for the peace, for example. And but we might be actually experiencing something different. We might be experiencing the restlessness, for example. And then the delusion part is that the delusion part is that we want it to be different. We are not really with the present moment reality of the restlessness in this moment. And instead, there is this kind of deludedness, like it should be different, and the craving for the peace in this case. Same with if we want pain to go away, or when we want the quiet holiday shopping. So delusion is basically not really seeing things as they are. We're really, deluded. We're not facing reality as it is. And wanting things to be different than they are in this present moment is like fighting a losing battle, because things are just the way they are. That's the fact of this moment. And we have a restless meditation, we experience pain, computer does not work the way we want it to work. These things just happen whether we want them or not. And part of life is that it is at times like uncomfortable, uncontrollable. It's just a series of moments happening one after the other, whether the eye likes it or not. And so when we are in that pattern of wanting things to be different than they are, then we are fighting with reality. And when we start to investigate this pattern, then we will start to see this, that it is kind of a fight that we're putting up. And then we'll start to see that it's actually unpleasant to fight, and it brings suffering. And there's this spiritual teacher, I don't know, maybe you've heard of her, Byron Katie. And she says, when you argue with reality, you lose, but only 100% of the time. So, and then in another quote that I, you know, really love, it says, just love what is. Whatever it is, just love what is. Also that. And then it implies to me also the unpleasant things, the things that we don't want. And I think that is actually what we are cultivating when we are practicing this insight meditation that we're doing here. Is we're working towards loving what is, whatever it is. We're really developing this skill to be with whatever arises in our experience, whether it is pleasant or unpleasant, from this kind of open and friendly attitude. And so we can use our Vipassana practice to work with this pattern of things should be different than they are. And the most obvious thing, of course, is to be mindful of the pattern. Like often we go into the content, the computer's not working, but we can become aware of, oh, that is this pattern, if I want it to be different than it is, instead of going into the content, we can become aware of like this meta level of a pattern happening, actually. So we can, when we notice, like it's kind of a lens we can look through. So it's kind of a choice we can make to look through this lens of this pattern. And then we can remind ourselves, oh, this is this pattern again. Like with whenever we feel something unwholesome coming up, greed wise or aversion wise, or their cousins, their many cousins that they have. And then we can become aware of the unpleasantness of wanting it to be different, unpleasantness of this pattern running in the background. And in that way, we are actually starting to face what is happening in this present moment. We start to face the pattern of wanting it to be different, which is breaking through the delusion that we were holding ourselves in of like trying to make it different. So in, apart from just simply being mindful and facing it, we can also try to allow it into our experience. So that's a little bit more active in the sense of it's kind of welcoming, like we're trying to really allow the pattern to be there. So we might, when we start to become aware of this pattern, we might actually try to push away the pattern itself, which is the pattern again working onto itself. So if we start to allow consciously, kind of with an intention, like, oh, I'm gonna sit back and relax and allow this pattern of wanting it to be different to be here. It's a welcoming that can really help to soften the pattern. And we can also, of course, allow the content of the pattern to be there. So if we have the frustration around the computer, that we allow the frustration to be there, and we allow the frustration around the computer, and we allow the computer to be the way it is and whatnot. We can allow the whole thing, but also the pattern itself. And that reminds me of this poem, The Guest House by Rumi, that you might know of. It goes like this. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows, who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door, laughing, and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So this reminds us that we can allow all visitors in our guest house. We don't have to be picky. And that also brings me on that all these visitors that we get in our guest house are impermanent. They will at some point leave again, which is good news. I mean, if it's something pleasant, then you might not like it that they leave. But when they're unpleasant, then this reflection on impermanence can be really helpful. Because we know that from experience that none of those guests that we've had so far in our life has stayed. They all arrived and they all passed away, they all went away. And like, do you remember like the last or the times when you were a kid that you didn't get any candy and you were frustrated about that? I know I had those moments, but I don't remember any specifics at all. So same with our day-to-day little frustrations that we have nowadays. Like in a decade, we will not remember any of it anymore, probably. So this reminding of ourselves of the impermanence of things can be really helpful. And that also helps us in this allowing that I was talking about, allowing it to be here because we know it's not going to stay. And then another tip is to look at that all these kind of frustrations and difficulties and the pattern of wanting it to be different itself is just a part of our human experience. We're all kind of in the same boat. We will all have these moments. So we can reflect on it's just a part of being a human being to experience this right now. And there's probably like a zillion other people experiencing something similar as I'm experiencing right now. So we can kind of find some comfort in, yeah, I'm not the only one. There's also a really beautiful quote from Sharon Salzberg about this. And I had this quote in Dutch, so I once translated it from English to Dutch, and I could only find the first part in English, so I translated it back to English. But it might not be 100% the way she said it because of the translation. She says, when we understand that the conflict and frustration we feel when we can't control the world doesn't come from our inability to do so, but rather from the fact that we are trying to control the uncontrollable, we know better than to try to keep the seasons from changing or the tide from rising. After the fall comes the winter. We may not prefer it, but we trust it because we understand and accept that it has a valid place in a larger cycle. In a larger whole. Can we apply the same wise balance to these cycles and tides of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral experiences in our lives? To see things as they are, to see their changing nature, to see their impermanence, to see the continuous flow of pleasant and painful experiences that is beyond our control. That is freedom. And I like to give a little, how do they call it? Like, disclaimer on this talk. Like, there are, of course, situations where we do want change. We do need to spur into action to change something. You know, we're not gonna, like, sit back and relax and watch a child run under a car or something, you know, we're just gonna grab the kid and pull it back on the pavement or whatnot. Or when we encounter some injustice or you know, when we are sitting in pain in meditation, we might just want to switch our position. Or, you know, it can be very large and very small things, but there are moments that it's appropriate to not just watch that things should be different and not change anything. And maybe a good way of looking at, like, oh, how should I deal with this situation is the very famous serenity prayer. I'll read it again. I know that you probably know it. It's grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So we are certainly welcome to change the things that we can, if it, especially if it is something really important or something that involves our own suffering or other suffering. But I hope that this talk inspires you a little bit to be with this pattern and to investigate it and to see that we don't always have to act on things that should change, and we can't always act on it, so we sometimes just have to be with it. Let me end with a quote from Sylvia Borstein. And this just came in today in the Spirit Rock newsletter. I don't know if you guys are get that one, but was so fitting for this talk. I had already prepared this talk and then this quote came in. Sylvia Borstein says, "I'll start with telling you one of the resolutions I made last year around wise speech. I decided I would give up the word shoot, and I listened to myself. Even in the middle of a sentence, if I said I should or he should have, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he should have, he didn't. What I really mean, and what is much sweeter for my mind to hear, is I wish I had done that, or I wish he had. And now I say it that way. It just keeps my mind a sweeter neighborhood with less bad people in it."